Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your life connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Hello, everyone. You're listening live with Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, and today's show, Fairy Tale Interrupted Relationship Coaching with Dr. Andrea Lee. Dr. Andrea Lee is a national speaker, an international author, a trainer at the Marriage Boot Camp, which is the same national 501c3 company that showcases a wee TV show called Marriage Boot Camp Reality Stars, and an in-demand certified life coach and relationship guru with Fairy Tale Interrupted. I know she has a lot of wonderful information she would like to share with you guys today. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome your host, Dr. Andrea Lee.
Hi, Dr. Andrea Lee here, your certified coach with Fairy Tale Interrupted Relationship Coaching. For those of you who are returning to listen to the show, welcome back. For those of you who are new to the program, I am honored that you have decided to spend your time with me, and welcome. Just a reminder, this show is a resource for real life as it bridges the gap between what society does not want to talk about and what is really happening in the family unit, the relationship, and the unique individual. We're going to do a change in format for the next few shows because I am bringing a short series to the Body, Mind, and Spirit Radio listening audience with regard to mental health issues that not only affect the family, but the community as well. To keep it light, the next few shows will have a roundtable feel as I have guests joining me through the entire show to give additional perspectives on various topics. Please note the following disclaimer, that all joining guests, including myself, are talking and discussing various topics within the scope of our professional and personal experiences and is being provided as a resource. It is not being offered as therapy because every individual situation is unique and would not sufficiently replace the capacity of a counselor or a therapist. But before we begin this roundtable of discussing today's topic, which is teen suicide, I would like to introduce today's very special guest, Colleen Chase, Penny Golden, and Courtney Overfeld. Let's introduce Colleen Chase first. With over 20 years of excellent experience, spiritual life coach Colleen Chase is an intuitive, energetic, psychic channel being of our Creator. She helps individuals get connected with their higher self, which is non-physical elements to who we are here on Earth. Colleen has the great gift of helping people move past negative beliefs and limitations so that people reach their highest and greatest potential in personal and professional life areas. She is also an experienced pathfinder, Reiki healer, and medium. Welcome, Colleen.
Yes.
And next, we're going to introduce Penny Golden, who is the founder and publisher of the Body, Mind, Spirit Guide and Body, Mind, Spirit Radio. After successfully running a small business and consulting for other businesses for the past 25 years, she has now devoted herself to publishing the guide, which is dedicated to highlighting Michigan's leaders and professionals from a holistic and spiritual field, spreading the wealth and knowledge of all aspects of the wellness and New Age movement from ancient wisdom to modern methods of being more than whole. You can pick up a copy of her guide in more than over 1,300 locations from hospitals, libraries, restaurants, and health centers. Or you could even download a free copy from the website at www.bodymindspiritguide.com. Welcome, Penny.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Dr. Andrea.
I'm so excited. And last but not least, we have Courtney Overfeld, who has over 10 years of experience working in the metaphysical community. She is an executive radio producer for Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, where she helps create, promote, and produce all the shows you hear on the radio network. She loves helping the community to find their voice and spread their own unique talents, inspirations, and teachings. She has successfully ran two businesses, including her current business, which is Divine Temperance, which she offers her services as a psychic, a medium, a healer, and carries her own product lines. In her sessions, she's very blunt, honest, straight to the point, which is why we're so excited to have her today, because she's going to be like me. She's going to keep it real. Her goal is to unveil the psychic truth. Welcome so much, Courtney, for being here with us today.
Thank you.
So let's go ahead and get started. Normally I talk about things that are very near and dear to my heart. Maybe some issues that are coming up within my clients that I see a pattern. And I try to use this show as a way to deal with that and to help the masses as opposed to one individual at a time. And a few weeks ago, I had, as many of my audience members know, my husband and I actually have 6 children from ranging of 16 to 6-year-old twins. And we have our oldest 2 in high school. A few weeks ago, they came home devastated because they had a friend that had committed suicide and passed. And my oldest had the hardest time. Now, it had not been the first time that this had happened. And the community feels bad, but then we just go on with our life and we really don't talk about it. Even within our community right now, we're not really talking about it. And yet I see my children, especially my oldest child, devastated by the loss. She was very good friends with the person and had a lot in common. And as part of the mental health series, I really wanted to focus on being able to make that impact of changing, of making more awareness to teen suicide and the risk of teen suicide. Now, this is a very hard topic to hear, but it's not just parents. It's not just the people around. It's a responsibility and accountability of the community to help stop this from happening because it happens later in life as well. So at this point, I would love to just give, you know, just some basic, some may say boring statistics because we may not even know. Did you know that suicide is the 3rd leading cause of death for 15 to 25-year-olds, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is behind accidents and suicides? For every 1 death that actually occurs from suicide, 25 attempts were not successful. Girls have at least twice of a chance of committing suicide. Girls have twice the amount of time that they think about suicide as boys, but boys are 5 times more likely to actually complete the action of suicide. I would love to hear, Penny, what you think of just those statistics alone right now.
Unfortunately, I'm not surprised, and I guess I would be surprised that it's not more. You know, I think we're lucky that it's not more because we often don't know how to connect in our society today, and we're not extending that knowledge on to the youth. So I'm surprised those statistics aren't higher.
And actually, Penny, just to piggyback on what you had just stated, also, this does not cover because we're only going by what's being reported. And a lot of attempted suicides may actually not be reported because it's a family taboo that we just don't want to get out into the public.
Sure.
You know, if the family doesn't want to, you know, anybody else to know. So, you know, chances are it probably is higher. Now, Colleen, what do you think about the statistics?
Well, I'm with, Penny, because I would have thought it would have been higher as well. Most of the teens that commit suicide around here commit suicide from the aspect of heroin. They have nothing else to do, so they do the drugs and they become, you know, statistics. But there's not enough people that will talk about the suicide of the intent.
Yeah, and I think that's also very important. You know, there are some that could be an accidental you know, an accidental overdose or something. And unfortunately, with teenagers, we do have to take into account that, you know, teenagers feel that they are invincible. And they do have a little bit more of risky lifestyle habits just because they do feel like, hey, you know, I know everything, everything's great. And they don't have that level of maturity. What do you think about that, Courtney?
I agree with Penny in her aspect. I'm actually surprised that it's not higher. I think part of that might be due to the fact that, yeah, there is a lot of families that are not going to report an attempted suicide. And, you know, if it's an attempted suicide within the home and it's not reported to a medical professional, obviously it's not going to be part of those statistics. And in a lot of cases, I think that that is very true. A family tries to deal with it within themselves, whether they think that they can make it better or they attempt to make it better. So I'm actually really shocked that it isn't higher. I think that it is higher. It's just not being reported.
Right. And, you know, again, statistics are only what we can, you know, what we have to go on. But I just wanted to provide that. And when I looked at that information, I was just like, wow, that's still a lot. That's
staggering.
Much. And not only that, thinking about it, that girls think about suicide twice as much as boys, but yet boys are 5 times more likely to actually, you know, commit the follow through. And, you know, it could be that, you know, again, 70% of suicide deaths for boys are actually involve a gun. So this side note, make sure that your guns are unloaded, make sure your guns are stored away, you know, properly kept. But, you know, that's very final as opposed to, let's say, the top way for a girl, which is to take medication or pills. You know, you do have that window of time to try to counteract it. And depending on who can find that person, depending on where she is, in the cycle of her body metabolizing the pills, it could be a little bit different. So I just found that to be quite interesting in thinking about it. What did you guys think about the fact about guns?
Did you say guns?
Yes, about the fact that, you know, the first choice would be for, you know, for suicide would be that they would choose guns to commit suicide.
Well, I think that's a natural for a man. It's all the suicides that's been here have been men who have shot themselves in the chest.
Okay.
So I think it's just something that, you know, comes into, I'm not going to say ego thing, but, you know, I'm taking my life, so I'm going to use the most important thing that I own or have to do it with.
Okay. Yeah, and that makes sense. Yeah, and you know, the one thing that I, you know, before we really get into like the risk factors and, you know, what increased the risk and things of that nature, you know, let's talk about the perception of suicide as a whole. And we're going to be talking about it a little bit more later on. But in regards to, you know, the community feels, oh, well, that person was a coward. That person, you know, took the easy way out about suicide. Before I actually give my thoughts and viewpoints on that situation, I'd be very interested, Courtney, we haven't heard from you in a little bit. What do you feel about that comment?
Well, I want to back up just a second and address the gun situation. And I just wanted to put my 2 cents on that. You know, I think that boys or men, I definitely agree with Colleen. It's a grand gesture. It's a grand way to go out. But we also have to kind of take a look at boys as a whole. You know, society shows them video games and computer games and so forth. And women are actually less likely to get themselves involved in those types of things. And so what is the thing that is being shown the most in a lot of those concepts is a gun. So it is kind of like that grand gesture of, hey, this is more accessible. This is an easier thing. So it's just something to keep in mind. But as far as the conception of suicide, you know, in society, I think that that is a really strong viewpoint of most, that they are taking the easy way out, or, hey, look, now they're not suffering anymore. They're at peace on the other side. And that's not always the case. You know, that's not what we should be focusing on is, oh, well, they're not suffering anymore because they did this, or, you know, they were weak and cowardly and, you know, good thing it's done and over with because they made that choice. I think it's something that allows us to process it easier and put it aside easier. And I think that that's just wrong.
Well, and I agree. And I think a lot, I mean, from my professional and my personal aspect as well, from being a coach and also having a psychology, you know, doctorate, is, you know, a lot of people think that, okay, they were cowards. But really the whole point of suicide is they, you know, the person doesn't feel that he or she can get through it or can't cope, just can't deal with it anymore and wants to just, you know, take that person out of the situation. And unfortunately, it's really about the coping mechanisms. You know, we're going to be going through some of the risk factors that we need to look for, you know, people that are at risk for suicide. And if you look at the risk, you know, you're really looking at the fact that someone is having a hard time coping. Would we all agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Yeah. So do you think with a lack of coping, do you think that's being a coward? Because that's what society is telling us, and I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I don't think that teenagers who commit suicide understand what they're doing. They don't understand that that's really totally the end. It's a way to get out of the situation that, you know, it's a temporary problem, a permanent solution.
Right, absolutely. So now, you know, did anybody have anything that they wanted to add before we actually went through the risk factors?
I would like to.
Okay.
I think the word coward is a perfect example of how we can often create more harm than good, because coward is a lack of courage. And it's true. When you feel suicidal, when someone has been weakened because of depression or whatever the causes that have led them close to the edge of suicide, they don't have courage. They often are lacking the strength to face the daily onset of normal life, getting up and going to school and being a part of a family and a peer group or the world at large. So in some ways, if we didn't have the negative connotation that went with coward, we would be kind and we would say, yes, you're lacking the courage. Let me show you how to build up courage in yourself and in your life so that you can begin to face these things. So I think, you know, we have to be careful with our words, and coward is the perfect example of how we are really condemning. But it's just lack of courage, and it's true. That's true, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, I completely agree. I completely agree with you. Do Courtney and Colleen, do you also agree?
Oh, definitely.
Most okay.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
No, I have heard.
You know,
I have power.
If we label something, if we label children, adults, we label them, they own that label. If you tell someone they're a coward, then they become a coward. If you tell someone
whatever courage they might have, if we look at the label, then we know what they need. That's what they're lacking. So we know coward is courage. We have to find ways to instill courage.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, and that's a great point for us to move on to the risk factors, because I think some of these are going to be quite obvious. But there, you know, there may be some more that, you know, just from experience that we can add. One is obviously changes in home life. You know, if someone has moved out of the house or, you know, divorce, a new, you know, person is in the house. There's so many different things. You know, that lack of support within the network, poor relationships with parents or peers, feeling of social isolation, especially if, and let's face it, especially with today's society, we have children that are dealing with bisexuality or homosexuality or trying to understand their sexual orientation. And there may be some unsupportive families or community members or even hostile school environments that are really isolating our children. Would we not all agree on that one?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Whether it's right or wrong, that's not for me to say. I'm just saying that that's something that's really affecting, because we actually have more people coming out and questioning their orientation, who they identify with. And as they're going through this process, you know, it's so important to realize that, you know, they need that support. And it's hard for someone that's from especially a prior generation. You know, this is all new to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then we can also talk about, you know, a family history of depression or suicide, of course, emotional, physical, or sexual abuse, a previous suicide attempt. If someone's feeling hopeless or worthlessness that often accompanies depression, irritable, agitation, distress, feeling like they're not good enough, like they're just, no matter what they do, they keep failing. The number one thing, despite all of those potential risk factors, is a psychological disorder, especially depression, bipolar, alcohol, and drug use. 95% of people who die from suicide have some sort of psychological disorder at the time of death. That seems like a very high number. What do you guys think about that? Does anyone want to share?
Could you repeat what you just said? 95%?
Which one?
95%.
The psychological, you know, a psychological disorder, especially depression, bipolar, alcohol, and drug use, which is, you know, just a side note fact that 95% of people who die by suicide have a psychological disorder at the time of death. So they're dealing with a mental issue, you know, already before they even commit suicide or think about suicide. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, it's not surprising to me. I think that's the cause. You know, I think that from my perspective in my life history, what I've learned is that the true cause of suicide, of depression, of, you know, all of these different things that we're talking about is caused by bonding. Even straight from when the child is born, what they're attempting to do at all times is bond to other people. And within us, within our bodies, our systems, the nervous system is attempting to bond and so it's a neural problem. And so that doesn't surprise me at all. And I think that that's where the solutions are too. You know, when we're well bonded to our parents, when we're well bonded to our siblings, and there's love and there's respect, then we're less likely to become a victim of all of the negativity that's happening in the world and in our worlds as we shift and change. So, you know, there's certain countries that have made all drugs legal, and they now are recognizing that all drug use comes from, you know, the drug-addicted person is bonding with the drug rather than bonding with people. And so they've begun to understand it, and now they take them through programs to start with plants and with animals and then with children and with people to help them bond to other living things rather than drugs or food or other dangerous things for them. So for me, that makes sense. What you said, the 95%. I would say it's probably 100%.
Well, and I had to have to say something because I have a very brown thumb. I mean, I'm married with six kids, and, you know, I have a great support system. But if you told me I could not Pasco could not collect $200 if I had to have, you know, connect with a plant, I would probably never be where I am today. So I'm really glad that they don't have that here right now in the United States. And that was just a, you know, side note when you were talking about that, that I was thinking, you know, but it's just, it is. It's definitely a lot of bonding, and it's being able to fit, feel like you fit in. You fit in with society, you fit in with your family, you fit in within yourself. And the problem that we have is that when you look at a teen is not a baby, but yet a teen is also not an adult. So they're in that in-between stage, and they're still trying to identify where they're supposed to be. And yeah, this is where they need the most support. Would you agree with that, Colleen?
Yes, I would. I believe that. If the parents are the teachers, and if they're not doing this themselves, the children cannot learn it from what they should be learning to grow and to be a strong person, a moral person, all that that brings us into the likeness of ourself, of God.
Yes, I actually agree with that. How about you, Courtney?
Well, I think that it's definitely a statistic that's not shocking, you know, that the majority of these teens who are committing suicide, you know, have some type of mental disorder. But, you know, let's take a look at how those develop. You know, Colleen and Penny are bringing up very solid points on that matter. But, you know, how much do we really truly acknowledge those disorders too? You know, if we're turning a blind eye to a psychological disorder, you know, how are those teens going to feel? You know, they may be depressed and feel like they have no outlet. They have nobody to talk to. They have nobody to go to because nobody wants to pay attention to that. Or, you know, some society believes that those things don't even exist. So, you know, it's not shocking that, you know, some of these issues, you know, with not bonding and not feeling support and mimicking their parents, you know, turn into this issue, and they feel like they're even more isolated and then feel like suicide is the only way out. I think that we really, as a society, need to take a look at not only how we're affecting the people around us and raising our children, but acknowledging that, you know, kids can develop these psychological issues, and they're valid. You know, they are valid. Maybe we don't understand them. Maybe we don't know how to deal with them, but we should not knock down the validity of them.
Correct. And I would like to kind of give an example if everybody, you know, would appreciate a minute to allow me the opportunity. I actually, you know, the first time my oldest daughter, you know, came home and told me that she had someone that she knew that committed suicide. My response was completely different than this last time. And I realized the first time, now looking back, that I was giving her advice and I was telling her how she should cope and how she should deal with it from an adult's perspective. When we have our kids tell us things are going on, what do we say? Oh, well, kids will be kids. Oh, well, you'll get through high school or you'll get through junior high and, you know, things will be better. In the rest of your life, it's not going to make a big difference. You just got to get through it. Well, everyone else has gotten through it. You know, you just got to do what you got to do, you know, to get by, and then that's okay. We don't really give them the validation of how they're feeling and acknowledging that their feelings are valid, and addressing those feelings at their level, not at a parent or an adult's perspective. Would we all agree?
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I think that would be a huge perspective. And now when I talk with my kids, of course, my older one, who's 16, who is hormonal, and we know all the good stuff about, you know, teenagers, you know, it is difficult. And you have to kind of put yourself back a little bit and kind of distance yourself away from, you know, some of the hormones and the drama. But you know what? When a child, you know, when you have your teenager that has broken up with a friend or has had a fight or grades or stress is starting to happen and grades are starting to fluctuate, you know, those are things that to them are very, very important because that's what they have. Those are their responsibilities. And if they feel that they're not completing their responsibilities, especially if you have a child that is a perfectionist, then you're going to feed into that, especially if you make it harder for them by addressing it from an adult's perspective. Does anyone else have any examples or any?
You have to kind of look at where a teenager is at. You know, yes, they're in that phase of becoming an adult, and they want to be an adult. But the concept of opening up to that adulthood is facing more responsibility and taking on the world as a whole. And in the meantime, they're still trying to finish out their childhood. And from that perspective, the world is very small. It is very, what am I dealing with at this moment in time? So a teen is kind of stuck in that crossroads of, you know, my world is right here. These are the things that I can control. Eventually, I am going to have to face the reality of more responsibility and the bigger world. But right now, I'm just kind of stuck right there as the monkey in the middle. And most people have a hard time relating to that teen perspective because an adult looks at the world as a whole. You know, these are my responsibilities. These are the things that I need to do and pay bills and take care of the family, whereas a teen is only facing what they're dealing with in the moment, and they are more likely to gather more emotion. You know, I remember when I was a teenager and breaking up, you know, with the boyfriend that I'd been for 6 months who cheated on me, oh my gosh, my world is crashing to an end. You know, I think we forget to relate on that teen level and understand their perception and where they're coming from. You know, they're more emotional, their world is expanding, yet they're still, you know, trying to control what they have in front of them. We often forget to take a different approach with teenagers because we are so fundamentally used to our approach as an adult. And I think that that's half the battle.
Right. I absolutely agree. And I think that's one of the things of understanding, yes, that, you know, you don't want to be the best friend to your child. You want to be a parent to your child, but you also want to have that relationship and that connection to where your child can talk to you and know that you're going to understand and you're going to listen. And if that's all that that child wants from you, you know, that child wants to, you know, create problem-solving skills on his or her own, that's fine. We listen. Even though we try to fix, you know, we just listen. Or if that child is still having issues and they don't know how to get out of that, you know, as a parent, we give them opportunities and empower them by giving them choices and options and hope they pick the best choice that's for them. Could we agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think on what both of you two are saying, when you're talking with a teenager, the teenager has this beautiful, fantastic, limited point of view. Literally, their now is everything. Their best friend is a lifelong best friend. They're not ever conceiving that 10 years from now and 20 and 30 and 40 and 50, they're going to have many best friends and many adventures in life and many opportunities. So they're very in the now, and so it's difficult. I think that's where suicide comes in. When something crashes in their world, they don't see beyond the crash. They don't see beyond that relationship having ended. Their whole world feels like it's over.
Correct.
And I think the benefit for parents, if they understand that, is that they can listen to every bit about how what they're thinking and feeling, how they connect with their friends, what their thoughts are, and end every conversation with, you know, I wonder how that's going to be when you're 44. I wonder how that's going to be when you're 34. Expanding their vision that this is just one part of their life. Teenhood is just literally, it's less than 12 years. You know, it's just a small part of their life. So that's what I like to do for teenagers, expand their vision. If you live to be 120, you know, what's going to be happening during that whole 120 years, not just right now while you're in high school. And I think that's what made the impact with my child, is to expand it out to their life, because I think they forget. They don't think that far.
Well, no, I mean they're all for today and not even thinking about tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you know, it's interesting that you say that, Penny, because I'm thinking about a situation that I had with my, you know, again, my oldest. And you know, she came home and she told me something, and again, I don't have authority on my, you know, my teenager would probably kill me if I said what happened. But anyways, I kind of replied back by saying, honey, I barely made it through high school myself. I understand how you feel. You know, being able to relate, hey, listen, you know, you're not the, you know, I understand what you were going through. I was a straight A student, and in 10th grade, I was bullied to the point where I was really, you know, looking for options. I had a 4.0, I was doing really well, and I was about ready to drop out of high school because I was so bullied. And I didn't have anywhere to go, didn't have anyone to talk to at that time, and I just felt like no one could help me. And I had someone that was, you know, my parents didn't know this option, but it was another school that I went to. And when I got to the school and I said, this is what's going on, you know, I have a 4.0, I don't want to drop out, but this is really, you know, I'm prepared to drop out of high school. The person's like, well, you understand that you'd only have to be here for a half a year and then you'd graduate a year and a half early because you've already done so many extracurricular and activities and you've gotten credit for it and blah, 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 blah. You know, would you switch over? And it was that person that made that difference for me. And I realized half of a, you know, one semester, half of a year, for me to graduate and not throw it all away, I could cope with that as opposed to the 2 years. And to think now I'm 37, I have a bachelor's, a master's, and 2 PhDs. By the time I was 30 with 6 kids, it's amazing how life can turn. You know, you don't want to make a decision. If life is so bad for you and you feel that it's bad, you know, you need to wait 5 minutes because you're only 5 minutes away from your next miracle. That one change, that one action that will change the rest of your life. And again, suicide is so permanent. And I just wanted to share that with our audience because, you know, I don't want people to think that, you know, Courtney, Colleen, you know, Penny, that, you know, we're sitting up here and we're judging and, you know, we had it very easy and we were popular and blah, 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 blah. I mean, I know what it's like to be in a situation where you don't feel like you fit in high school.
Yeah, I think, I don't know about everyone else. I was suicidal as a child. Yeah, in my teens, I was suicidal. So I definitely have a lot of my personal experience and knowing, looking back now, you know, I'm not sure, you know, if I've connected all the reasons why I held on, but I do know that you're right on. If you, you know, it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And sometimes you can't solve the problem for the teenager, but even if you could get them to see, you know, what are you going to be doing at 24? If you can get them into a vision of a higher vision, I think they can maintain better. So expanding their vision, I think it's really big. It's really important.
In addition to empowering them to make their own decisions, because if they feel like they have that power, that empowerment to have options, then it's like they are gaining control back in, over their life instead of living from that victim state.
Yeah, definitely.
I haven't heard from you, Courtney. What are your thoughts?
Well, like the both of you, I've had my own personal experience with suicide. When I was in high school, my parents started fighting every single day, and they would turn their arguments on me. And I, a lot of people don't know this about me, but I actually made 8 suicide attempts. And my last attempt was not successful because obviously I'm still here, but it was successful enough to where I was rushed to the hospital and I was hospitalized for a week, you know. And I think that the biggest thing that I can say from my personal experience is my parents weren't there. You know, they didn't comprehend that every time they turned their arguments on me and blamed me for their arguments, that it ripped me apart, it tore me down. You know, I'm watching how they're coping and how they're dealing and how they're managing, and they're putting that all on me in a way. You know, I think parents don't always look at the fact that whether you're a teenager or you're 2 years old, because I'm in the process of an adoption, and trust me, I've thought about this a lot, those children pay attention to you. They pay attention to your actions and how you handle situations, how you resolve things, how you, you know, how you cope. You know, they learn from you. You're their biggest teachers. And you may think that you're helping in a way, but really maybe you're just not. And the biggest thing that I can say is that, you know, parents need to find this level of patience. And I know that it's not something that you can gather overnight, but it's the biggest thing that I've learned on my path to becoming a parent. I need to be patient. I need to be understanding. I need to realize the example that I'm setting for this child that I'm trying to bring into our world, because she's going to be learning everything from us. And if I don't handle these situations in a proper manner, she could eventually get to that point where she feels so isolated and she's learned the wrong things, and she could make that attempt. And that's how I felt, you know, that I didn't have my parents to go to. Nobody was paying attention. And, you know, everybody was focused on my parents and them considering a divorce, and they could not relate to my world, and I felt alone enough to where I didn't want to live anymore. I thought that I was the problem, and if I could just leave, that, you know, the problem would be solved. And I can tell you from my personal experience that being hospitalized, I'm not saying that this is a recommendation for anyone, but it was a blessing for me, because what I learned in that experience is I may be 16 years old, but I have more control and power, and my world is wider than even I realized. And from moving forward from that experience, I learned, you know, it doesn't matter where it's parents or children or friends or whoever's impacting me, I have a level of control on how I accept that. You know, that was a step towards becoming an adult, but that was a step towards realizing that I am old enough to comprehend that whatever comes at me, I decide how it affects me.
Yeah, and I agree that, and I, you know, I honor you for sharing that with us and with the listening audience, because I think, again, you know, people may be listening to us and, you know, on the show and saying, oh, well, they sound like they have it all together. They don't, you know, they're not, they don't relate to me. This is, you know, they don't know my situation. So that's another good example, Courtney. So again, I honor you for, you know, offering, you know, that part of yourself to our listening audience. What about Colleen? What are your thoughts?
Well, my story is I had really, really abusive parents. Excuse me. The first time I remember wanting to do away with myself was when I was 7, when my father had beat me with a jump rope, and my mother just not doing anything to protect me. So I'm in this state where, you know, why isn't anybody here to help me? Why am I being in this place where people don't see that I'm being hurt? So I was baptized Catholic in Germany, and I had this wonderful woman. She was my godmother, and she spent 4 years. I spent 4 years with her, not living with her, but learning from her the difference between, you know, the good and the bad, and how to relate to yourself as being in the spot that it wasn't you, it was not your fault, it was theirs. You weren't the one that was causing, you know, all the commotion that went into the household. So every time you would turn around, you would have this, you know, thing staring at you, and and, you know, getting ready to yell at you or whatever. So on those things going up through, I lost my daughter when she was very young, when she was six, and that was a very close time that I would have taken myself back to her. My twin sister saved me because she I just didn't want her to go through any more pain after losing her niece. So from that moment on, I realized that I had to change my way of thinking of, you know, being not that suicidal, but that growth part of being able to see who you are, see what's going on.
Well, and Colleen, that's, you know, that's a pretty hard situation to be in, especially when you're seven, you don't even have those coping mechanisms.
Right, to have
someone pull you aside and be able to teach you that, I mean, that was definitely a divine intervention somewhere, whatever you believe, that helped you get through that point. Because imagine what would have happened if you would have done that and you would have been successful. We would have never met and you would have never been able to continue on with the beautiful work that you help for people.
And that's so true. That's why I kept myself in a place where I knew I had to, I loved God, and He kept me in a place where I knew I had to be. No matter what happened in my life, there was always that little space where I never left.
Yeah, and you know, at this point, I'm just so glad for all of us that we've made it through school. You know, because, it's not as easy as it looks on TV. We'll just say that. I do want to get into just really quick, you know, and we're going to go through this section really quick, which is just some warning signs. Some may be, you know, when I say warning signs of someone thinking about suicide, it's usually someone will see these warning signs after a major event, but it may be something that's very small. It may be big in that person's life, but, you know, as a parent, you're looking at it, it's like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. So we have to look at that from the whole perspective. And the warning signs would be the teen engaging in risk-taking behaviors, having trouble concentrating or thinking clearly, loss of desire to take part in favorite things or activities, eating too much or not enough, not getting enough sleep or sleeping too much. Big one, starting to give away treasured possessions or to siblings or friends. Writing poems, songs, or letters about death, separation, and loss. Starting to detach from family and friends. Talking about suicide and death in general. That's a big, big one. Give hints that they might not be around very much or any more, if at all, and loss in interest in school, sports, their grades may go down, and at this point, again, they're starting to detach from, I call it from the living, but from their all aspects of their life. That includes that, you know, their hygiene, they may not be taking care of themselves. If they've had makeup, you know, for girls and, you know, nails, all of a sudden, no longer interested in keeping up with appearances, you know, that type of thing. Those would be huge warning signs. And I don't want to stay very long on this, but can we think of any more? Does anyone else have any additional ones that I may have missed?
I mean, I think that, you know, lack of interest is the biggest one that I think parents should, you know, those warning signs are definitely there. And, you know, we definitely should pay attention to all of them. But I think that the most common one that maybe parents don't pay attention to is a lack of interest. They don't want to do the things that they love anymore. They don't, you know, read, or they want to, you know, don't want to write, or they don't want to be involved in sports, or they don't want to do the things that they love. You know, that is a huge sign of separation that we often ignore. Oh, well, they'll just move on to something else. But if they're giving up on their passions, I think that we tend to kind of, you know, throw that to the side, and that is a huge warning sign.
Actually, I could understand why you think that, but for me, I would respectfully have to disagree. And again, we can all have our opinions here. That's why we're having a roundtable. That's very important, Courtney, to say yes, you know, behavior changes, you know, no longer having interest. But also with the added stress, especially with juniors and with seniors that are getting ready for college, if they've had really great grades and then their grades start to slip, that is a huge indicator, which unfortunately was something that was a warning sign from a few weeks ago. That was probably the number one warning sign because it means that they're so stressed out that they're not coping, that they're not being able to keep up with things that they are, you know, at one time they deemed important.
Mm-hmm.
But again, Courtney, I mean, that's also, we can have our opinions. I think both are very important. What do you think, Colleen and Penny?
Yeah, you know, because I don't have children. My childhood was gone, so I didn't have children. So I never had teenagers around me to see, you know, all that, the sorrow and stuff like that. So it when I listen to you, it makes me feel good to, you know, just to be able to hear you talk about that and help and want to help other mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers out there that will help keep them from committing suicide. I just honor you guys.
Well, and you know, Colleen, I have six, so my older two can get on a plane.
And you know who loves your smallest one, don't you?
So if you want to borrow some kids, I'm sure Penny or, you know, some of us will be able to give you that experience.
Well, would you come to New Hampshire?
Yeah, it's only it's supposed to be a 14-hour drive from Michigan, but unfortunately with six kids, it takes about 17 and a half.
But it was worth it.
Yeah, so, just usually don't do it until they're older. That's what I say. But, yeah, I mean, that's something that's very important. What about, what are your thoughts, Penny?
You know, my thoughts are for each child, each person, there's something that is their core. I call it the I am. You know, they create it. They make a choice by looking at their world from their siblings, their parents, maybe their peers, and they say, hey, I am always the happy one in the room. I am always the dancer. I can turn anything into a dance. So they have these core ways of connecting. And if we know the person's core ways, if any one of them shifts, then we have to pay attention. Those are the great I ams. They're not just, you know, I'm a great dancer on Saturday or at church. An I am is, I can do that anywhere, anytime. You know, I can make a joke anytime or I can dance anytime. So getting to know your children or the children in your life, might be grandchildren, the things that they're passionate about, they're great I ams. And I think that's why you and Courtney could have a difference of opinion even on that. Is it a great I am? They've decided for their whole lifetime they're a great humorist. They can always make a joke, or they're a great dancer, or they're a great they're a great learner, and so learning is a top of the bar. They're going to be that. That's who they are. If they believe that's their core being. If that shifts their core, then just like if your core shifted, you wouldn't even be able to stand up straight. You know, without our core, you know, we can't physically stand. You know, so I think we have to know the people around us and know those things that are I ams, the big cores of their personality. And if any of those shift, we have to really get close to them and be there and support them.
And that
hopefully
brings
that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, so I think we're all on the same page. I was pretty much going to be wrapping this up, but I think you guys have absolutely done it wonderfully and better than I could have ever. I wanted to provide disclosure that please note that all the joining guests, including myself, are talking and discussing various topics within the scope of our professional and personal experiences, which is to provide a resource. is not being offered as therapy because every individual situation is unique and will not sufficiently replace the professional capacity of a counselor or a therapist. Please, if you feel yourself or you know someone that is in a situation where they need help mentally, please reach out to resources. It's 800-SUICIDE. Also, you could go to the nearest ER, call 911, get a therapist, make sure you keep the appointment, and also do not give up. Do not give up because you are 5 minutes away from your next miracle. The one thing I wanted to do before we quickly close is, Penny, you have your own practice. How can they reach you if they want to get in? How can our audience reach you if they want to get in contact with you?
I don't have a practice.
Well, for your body, mind, and spirit guide.
Oh, for my magazine.
Correct.
The magazine can be downloaded on our website, bodymindspiritguide.com. My phone number, if anybody did want to talk with me, is 734-513-6137. And that's it.
Thank you. And Courtney?
Well, you can reach me in two different capacities. If you're interested in radio, you can definitely email me at radio@bodymindspiritguide.com. You can also connect with me through the website. So anybody out there that has any interest in radio definitely can reach out to me that way. You can also call me at 313-516-8210. That number is both for radio and it's also my business line for my private practice. As far as my readings go and my private practice, you can reach out to me on Facebook, Divine Temperance, or you can go through my website, divinetemperance.com.
Okay. And Colleen Chase, how would our audience be able to reach you for an appointment?
Well, it's very, very simple. Just call my number, 603-747-2554, and we will talk and see what you need.
Okay. And for those of us that may be needing an appointment but we're trying to do it at work, do you have an email that we could quickly email you for?
Yes. Paul_Chase@yahoo.com.
And again, my name is Dr. Andrea Lee with Andrea Relationship Coaching, of course, .com. And again, that's Andrea, HTTP or www.AndreaRelationshipCoach.com. You can also reach me on my fan page, which is Relationship Coaching. What is it? Relationship Coaching with Andrea Lee. So you could go out and do that. You can also go to the website, and when you actually do the website, you can fill out a form. And my phone number is 248-880-8336. Thank you so much, ladies. I've had a pleasure speaking with you. Hopefully we've made a difference in the lives of others. And in our next session, we will actually be talking about mental health as it relates to society, especially with women and mothers, wives, mothers, women. So this is going to be a very, very important topic for June, and I'm looking forward to offering my expertise and my skills for June's episode. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
It was a pleasure to have all of you on the phone.
Thank you for having me, too.
If you are just tuning into the show, be sure to share it. Through BodyMindSpiritRadio.com. You can share all archived episodes through there. And also, this segment was split into two parts. So if you're listening to the first or you're listening to the second, please make sure you listen to the other half. And obviously, stay tuned for Andrea's next show in June, where she does a continuance on this subject as well.